of course, biased, but I'm very, very positively biased that we are at the very early and nascent stage of a real big evolution, right, in deep tech from India. We are still just scratching the surface of what is possible from India. In the next 10 plus years, we will see amazing technical innovations that companies will create, and great companies that will get built in the deep tech sector.
Hi, I'm Pranajeep, and welcome to another episode of Deep Tech Musings podcast. Joining me today is Arjun, founding partner at Special Invest, an early-stage venture capital fund focused on deep science and deep tech startups. Special is an outfit that I highly regard in deep tech, and Arjun, so glad you could join us today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pranajeet. Excited to be part of this conversation today, and thanks for the kind introduction.
So we'll talk about how to crack the VC role and hopefully in the process help those who want to advance their career in that direction. Let's start with a quick overview of Special Invest itself. What was its motivation to start and what are its investment thesis?
Sure. My partner, co-founder Vishesh, and myself, we started Special now more than 6 years ago. Our own backgrounds were sort of diverse and different from a path perspective of how we arrived at this. I'm an engineer by training, worked early in my career in software, did product management, and then did two startups myself, right? So I've been a 0-to-1 startup operator for most of my career, close to 15 years, and therefore sort of understand the early stage journey and appreciate it and have a deep regard and fascination for that phase, which we call the 0-to-1 phase, right? So that's sort of my background, technology marketing. My co-founder, Vishesh, this comes from the finance background. He also spent close to a decade at a larger venture capital firm before starting the firm. So he understands venture capital investing fundamentally and from the ground up, but equally also has a strong interest and fascination and, you know, motivation for early stage startups. Right? So that was a common link between Vishesh and I. Of course, we went to business school together many, many years ago. So that's how we know each other. But we were both super excited about helping early stage entrepreneurs, both with capital as well as with advice and support, right? So that was the common thematic with which we thought we could start a firm. The other commonality between our thinking and our philosophy was that kind of startups we wanted to back should be differentiated, should have tech innovation and depth and the heart of the product, right? And we had various reasons to arrive at that, but two primary reasons would be that other areas that were tech-enabled, like B2C, fintech, consumer, regular tech, were already areas that were taken. Many good funds there in the country investing in those sorts of ideas, and those numbers are also very large. So there is very limited, you know, gap/differentiation. When there was a gap was cutting-edge technology, innovation/deep tech. Correct. And we also strongly believe that from a timing perspective, the timing was right for India to start creating deep tech products and businesses around deep tech. If you look at a history of the Indian tech ecosystem, it can probably start with IT services, correct, in the 80s and the 90s. Then moving on to the 90s and the 2000s, we started having offshore development centers of global MNC product companies, be it Microsoft, Cisco's, Yahoo's, Google's, etc. of the world, correct? So we started building products, but we were building products for global product companies out of India. So we had the talent evolution in that. The third phase was, of course, building our own product companies, which we have seen over the last 15 years or so. We built Paytm, Flipkart, Swiggy, Zomato, etc. These are all tech-enabled products for the Indian markets. But it was the next step of evolution, okay? And therefore, it made logical sense for us, and looking at the talent pool in the country, that the next 10, 15, 20 years, definitely Indian talent pool in cutting-edge technology, IP-driven stuff, would keep growing and would solve really compelling problems. And therefore, there was a gap in the market for capital availability in the early stage. So all of these factors sort of came together, you know, about now, like I said, 6 to 7 years ago for us to think about, you know, setting up Special.
Great. Love that backstory. Now, Special is one of the best place for deep tech startups. So can you highlight few portfolio startups and the role Special has played in their growth that lends it the credibility of being one of the best places?
No, thank you for the kind words. I think we have a long way to go. We're still early in that journey. We focus on cutting edge deep technology startups, both hardware and software, with enterprise flavors. 50% of our portfolio is focused on enterprise software and SaaS, with cutting edge tech at the heart of it, which is AI, machine learning, computer vision, cloud infrastructure, data infrastructure, security, privacy, dev tools, and many other things. All right. The other 50% of our portfolio is focused on what we call deep tech / frontier tech, usually at the intersection of hardware, engineering, sciences, and software. At least two of these disciplines coming together, two or more of these disciplines coming together to solve complex problems in really large industries. Correct? And industries that we have and industries and sectors that we are focused on include space technology, robotics for manufacturing automation, climate tech, sustainability with a flavor of EV, battery tech, green hydrogen, water, and so on and so forth. We've also dabbled in areas such as quantum cryptography. We've dabbled in areas such as semiconductors and now looking to emerging areas in synthetic biology and biotech. Correct? All of these are examples of where engineering, sciences, hardware, or software, some of these disciplines are coming together to solve complex problems. So that's the thesis and the high-level approach. Particular companies that I'd like to give shout-out to from our first fund, which we started 6 years ago, we had a very strong thesis in space technology with the background that India is a very strong spacefaring country, ISRO being the leader in that from a government perspective. We've, of course, done phenomenally well on building satellites, building rockets, launches, and frugally from India for many, many years, primarily done by ISRO. And therefore, there's a talent pool and an understanding of how to do this. And now, if we put a layer of startups and privatization on top of that, the timing and India seem like a fertile ground for that opportunity. But this background is why we started investing in space technology 5+ years ago. One of our very early investments in space tech was a company called Agnikul Cosmos, which was incubated out of NCCRD and IIT Madras. And, they were building 100% 3D printed rockets to take satellites to lower Earth orbit. And that was a unique innovation and unique approach of multiple facets coming together to solve this fairly complex problem of building small but high quality rockets and launch vehicles at a very fast pace and at being very cost efficient, right? And now looking ahead 5 years from when we first invested, they've come a long way. They have built out the rocket. It is ready. It is tested at multiple fronts. We are all eagerly waiting for their first test launch, which will happen out, with the guidance and help of ISRO from Sriharikota in the coming months sometime, right? So that's a long journey that they have taken 5+ years. And they are at this place. So that's an exciting place. They have now raised 4 rounds of capital since we invested. And the rockets are ready. The rocket factory in IIT Madras is ready, and they continue to innovate on various aspects. So that's an exciting journey for Agnikul Cosmos since the time that we were the very first investor in them close to 4 to 5 years ago.
Great. And it's amazing to learn about the breadth of the technologies that you've touched upon in your fund across these few years. So that's really great to know that so much of innovation is happening in the deep science and deep tech space, and you are enabling them to move forward, take that leap from 0 to 1 and beyond. Let's now come to the topic of our discussion today. And you already highlighted your background of how you moved through your career. I want to understand now, what were the key factors or events that inspired you to make that transition from a product person to becoming a VC?
Yeah, no, I think that's an interesting question. And also be candid and honest here to say that, everything was not planned. It was not, originally thought out that I wanted to come to venture capital or become an investor, correct? But I think a lot of factors and a lot of events along the way, you know, came together for this to happen. A bunch of serendipity as well. Just from a background perspective, I started my career at Yahoo, right? And I was a software developer there for a few years, building products at scale. In those days, of course, Yahoo was a, you know, was one of the leading companies in the internet, right? So we were solving very complex problems on the technology and the software and data infrastructure side as well. Right? So I got a very unique glimpse. And I was fortunate enough to have that glimpse early in my career of what a Silicon Valley company, you know, looks like, acts like, and builds upon, right? So those were my formative years in some sense. But that also led me to appreciate building of products, right? Beyond just the technology and the innovation and what it took to think through customer requirements, customer expectation and user journeys, et cetera. And that sort of was the transition for me to go to business school at ISB in Hyderabad and then therefore go into the product side of things. And my early years after business school was as a product manager at, again, an early stage internet company. Correct. So that taught me to build products, to launch products, but more importantly, it taught me to work with various stakeholders. Correct. As a product manager, you work with engineering teams, you work with design teams, you work with marketing teams, you work with business teams, you work with top management to push your ideas, to push your plans, to seek for resources. So I think the product management experience was sort of a growing up experience, right? Of thinking through not just technology and product, but how to take it to market, how to work with various stakeholders, and to balance out everybody's requirements and skills and put it all together into one product and launch it and hopefully make it successful. Sort of ownership of a product came from there. I would also say that that probably guided me or motivated me to become an entrepreneur to some degree. The fact that as a product manager, I was able to take a concept of a product and launch it end to end, build it, work with engineering, then launch it, scale it, you know, get customers for it, users, and then, you know, hopefully monetize it. Of course, I did it within a larger firm, but then I figured if I could do that myself, you know, then I could be an entrepreneur. That was one reason why I became an entrepreneur in 2009. The other reason was, of course, your surroundings influence you a lot, which meant that me being in Bangalore and the startup ecosystem here and the energy around was always very high. Correct? So I knew friends and I knew peers and I knew people that were starting companies, that were building companies, that were innovators, that were entrepreneurs. And that obviously was a interesting place to be in, right? Because you could feel the energy. You could see so many people doing great stuff around you. And sometimes you feed off that confidence and say, hey, maybe we can also do this. So these two factors sort of led me to start my first company in 2009, right? Leading to 2010. Of course, that first company was not really successful. We launched a product, built a product, launched a product, right? But we weren't able to monetize it and get customers for it, which is also a humbling journey at that point. And that led us to, but the long story short there was, I enjoyed being an entrepreneur. I understood the hardships of it. But I also knew that I did not want to go back to not being an entrepreneur, right? Even though my first startup was not very successful, right? It told me that I wanted to continue to be entrepreneurial. So after shutting down my first startup and the second startup, you know, I was more motivated to solve that problem and work with the right co-founders and figure out building something for scale, right? So that was phase two of my entrepreneurial journey. Started a company called Travelyari.com, right? Along with a few co-founders in the bus ticketing, online ticketing space, B2C and B2B. And that company, you know, really helped me learn a lot in that journey, which was 6 years from scratch, raising venture capital, you know, building a product, taking it to market, scaling it very quickly, scaling an organization, going through good times and bad times as an entrepreneur taught me a lot, right? Originally being only a product technology person, as an entrepreneur, you grow up particularly through good and tough times. And those learnings of becoming a probably a holistic entrepreneur in terms of finance, operations, strategy, fundraise, and all of the above, correct, came in those 6 years. So that is sort of, I know it's a longer answer to your short question. That's sort of the background to how I understood and appreciated the startup journey, right? And therefore, when I was moving out of my second startup, which is Travelyari, in 2016, right, I was thinking about what to do next. And one of the things that I naturally gravitated towards was, you know, working with other entrepreneurs, right? Many entrepreneurs who were friends, who were starting companies, would come to me seeking advice, guidance, or networks, right? And that I had built over many years. And therefore, I was able to help them in some form or shape, particularly in the 0-to-1 journey. And more importantly, when they asked me advice, at least I was able to guide them on the mistakes I had made and help them avoid that, right? It's harder to say what you should do, but it was easier for me to tell them what not to do based on my experience of the mistakes I made, right? And that sort of one thing led to another to say, hey, I started spending time with entrepreneurs, helping them on 0-to-1 company building, you know, product, team building, strategy, fundraise, etc. Correct? And that's also the time, you know, towards the latter half of my entrepreneurial journey and this advising startups when Vishesh and I came together and he had started doing some angel investing. Correct? You know, beyond what he was investing from his fund, the fund that he was working at. And therefore, I also collaborated with him and helped these startups and helped them raise money and also started doing angel investing. So as we started doing these things, right, we realized that there was complementary skill sets, correct? And I was particularly able to empathize with the founder, early founder journey and help them in that early journey. And that sort of is a background of why, you know, serendipitously, I became an investor.
Awesome.
The past experience and the learnings that had come together.
And that's even a better backstory than your first one. I really appreciate you sharing those details. I think you summed up the PM role quite aptly in the shortest possible time possible. And I agree. Like, I think product people are some of the best entrepreneurs. Inherently, they have the entrepreneurial traits, I believe. And they are doing it in various organizations. And some of the product people go on to become some of the best entrepreneurs in the road ahead. So really appreciate you sharing that. Let's talk about the VC firm now. Can you help us understand the structure of a VC firm and the different roles in it?
Sure. I think, simply put, a VC firm pulls in capital from a variety of investors called limited partners / LPs, right? And that pulled in capital is what people like us, myself and Vishesh, who are called general partners /GPs of the fund, correct? We pool in that capital and we manage deploying that capital into a variety of startups, correct? So we could have different types of funds, small funds, medium-sized funds, and very large funds, depending on early stage, mid stage, or late stage, growth capital, seed capital, so on and so forth, right? But simply put, it's pooled in capital from limited partners that general partners like us manage, correct? And our goal is to build a portfolio of companies, correct? In the thesis and the thematic that we have pitched and promised to our LPs, right? In our case, we are early stage deep tech investors. There could be mid to late stage, you know, consumer investors. There could be SaaS investors. There could be, you know, fintech investors, so on and so forth. These are all thematics, either horizontal or very specialized. Like, we are more specialized. There are funds that do, you know, across sectors as well as across stages. So they are multi-stage, multi-sector focused. So the theme in which we are focused on, we try to invest over a period of time. Typically, fund life cycles are 8 to 10 years, right? For when we have to return capital to our LPs. In this, the first half of the fund cycle is typically when investments are made, which is building of the portfolio, right? And the second half of the fund cycle, which is the last 4 to 5 years, is when these companies scale up or grow up and then exits are expected. And therefore, what we call harvesting of the fund in some sense. So first half of the fund is to invest, second half of the fund is to harvest, correct? So that's sort of a broad understanding of how capital comes in, how a portfolio is created of multiple companies where we invest, you know, the amount that the LPs give us cumulatively. And then how do we try to make returns? There are two key components from the economics perspective. One aspect is what is management fees, which is there is a nominal fees on an annual basis through the life of the fund that the GPs use to run the firm, right? So we hire a team, we have an office, we do due diligence, legal, compliance, et cetera, all of these costs, correct, that help run the fund come from management fees, including our salaries, et cetera, right? That's management fees. The other piece is what is called carried interest or carry, which is profit sharing on the profits made on the fund, right? And that is a certain number, typically in the range of 20%, correct? So whatever is the fund size, whatever profits we make on the fund, we return most of the profits and keep the carry for the GPs. And that's the main aim of the GPs, main goal of the GPs to maximize that by maximizing the returns for the LPs.
And the team you mentioned that you built, so what are the roles in that team?
Yeah, again, typically think about four things that a VC firm does. Number one is raising capital from LPs, which mainly the GPs are responsible for. The team can support. Number two is, of course, finding the best companies in the ecosystem to invest in. So having great deal flow, evaluating them, right, on the merits and doing diligence and making a decision on investing or not investing. Right? So typically we, in our case, for example, we look at a few thousand companies a year to invest in 5 to 6 companies a year. So the team is also responsible for finding as many early stage companies in the deep tech flavor as possible, basically identifying deal flow and evaluating that, building thesis on a variety of areas so that we have the knowledge base to evaluate these startups. Okay? So the number two pillar is this, deal flow and thesis and evaluation. Number three is post-investment support to the portfolio companies that we invest, right? So of course, giving them capital is one thing, but helping them through their growth and evolution, right? It could be early stage customer access. It could be early stage team building. It could be helping them with getting follow-on capital, helping them find advisors, so on and so forth, right? So a lot of work goes in post-investment as well, right? So the team is also structured to help all of these portfolio companies. The last thing, which is of course critical also, is exit management and helping companies exit at the right time, either being an IPO, either doing an M&A, or follow-on capital raise and larger investors buying out it. That also requires a fair bit of networking, connects with the broader ecosystem, larger investors, larger companies, so on and so forth. Correct? So these are the things that typically are the tasks or activities that people within, you know, a VC fund do. Therefore, from a team construct perspective, we are typically partners between, under, you know, working closely with the partners as mid to senior level people, principals or VPs, you could call them, correct? Who have experience in the domain, who spend time in the ecosystem, who can do all of these things, you know, maybe 10 plus years of experience typically. Under them would come investment managers, and they would help in both thesis building, evaluation, deal flow, portfolio support, variety of other things, correct? I would say 5 to 10 years of experience. And junior to them would be analysts and associate, could be freshers, but could be 2 to 5 years of experience, correct? And they do a lot of, again, deal flow, thesis building, understanding technologies, writing that, etc., and helping on a variety of aspects. So typically from top to bottom, we'd say partners, principals slash VPs, investment managers, and then analyst associates. That's typically the structure of the firm that is doing all these activities that we do.
Great. All right. That sounds good. No. So what are the key skills now from your product background that you think have been the most useful in your role as a VC?
Now, I would say definitely there's an understanding and appreciation of product technology and innovation, right? Having been in products and having built products But most importantly, even on the product side, you could have been a product person, but in a particular domain, in a particular technology stack. If you want to be a successful VC over a longer period of time and invest in variety of technology and variety of products, then I would say the number one skill and requirement is high level of curiosity, correct? To keep learning newer and newer areas of technology, innovation, products, correct? Because when we are building a broad portfolio, we are not only investing in one or two technology areas, we're investing in multiple deep technology. Like I'd already shared, we have done things in space technology, we have done things in robotics, EV, software, hardware, biotech, AI, machine learning, cloud infrastructure. That's so wide, right? For us, for me to even translate my learnings, of course, there's some understanding of software and some other things. There has to be a constant curiosity of understanding of technology stacks, and more importantly, their applications in real world and in industry, correct? Because that is where you can convert technology into commercial value, and that's how a business is formed. So understanding of those things probably helped me to some degree, but continued curiosity and try to learn newer and newer areas and being in touch with a variety of people across sectors and understanding what they're building was very helpful. So I would say the other, you know, key trait that has helped me over the years is building deep, meaningful relationships and networks across the board. So you have to kind of understand that VC is also a people game, right? You have to understand how you can leverage your network to both find entrepreneurs as well as to evaluate them as well as post-investment to help them. We're always thinking, who do I know from my past life, either my software development days or my product management days or my entrepreneurial days, correct? Who do I know that can help me learn something new, that can help me understand a new technology area or a sector? And then who can also be a great source of deal flow, correct? Who can refer great founders to me and saying, hey, look at this founder who is starting this company and they might be relevant for you. So it's very important that past relationships and networks are maintained over a very long period of time. And there is a reason that people can reach out to you that when they are starting a company or when somebody they know is starting a company in areas of your interest, right? So I would say high level of curiosity, understanding founder mindset, and having access to the best founders through relationships and networks over a longer period of time have all been very helpful for
me. Got it. Now, we product people also have what we call sometimes the product sense, the ability to make decisions in some major ambiguous situations, both at macro and micro levels. I think that also helps or would carry on to help in this VC world wherein you always don't have the full information and you need to make a decision based on the, say, 60%, 70% information that you have about a startup or maybe about a sector. Would you agree on that?
No, that's a very key point, well articulated. I think learning to live with ambiguity is a key skill in general. Like you rightly said, yes. You're never going to have complete information, even more so at the early stage of a company,
yeah.
Right? When maybe the product hasn't even built, has yet to get built, there are definitely no customers or revenue, correct? So therefore, projections, you don't know cost of acquisition, you don't know how much the customer is paying you, you don't know pricing, you don't know speed of, you know, how quickly a customer adopts it. There are so many unknowns, correct? So particularly at pre-seed, seed where we operate, right, the ambiguity is very high. So one has to be comfortable with that. And maybe you're right. Some of the, you know, training during the product days may have helped me with that. And also the entrepreneurial stint more on, you know, helped me with chaos, right? And be comfortable with chaos, correct? Because early stage startups are chaotic, right? Things don't go according to plan most of the time, correct? You can have a plan, which is very important, but things will change. One has to adapt. And therefore, that mindset and that temperament and that patience when things don't go to plan is also important to deal with founders as a VC, correct? Of course, during the evaluation time, when a founder is coming and telling a narrative or a pitch, which is today not reality, but story, right? One has to be able to fill in the gaps, right? And understand the key aspects of that story and the pitch and be able to imagine what is possible. And then, of course, use your learning and past experience to say how probable or possible is this, right? Inherently, you know, a job of a venture capital is to look at the upside, correct? And therefore be optimistic about the outcomes. And therefore evaluate every founder story and pitch in the way that what is the possible upside in this, correct? And what are the possibility that this can get built? This really hard problem that can get solved despite all the challenges that one might face, correct? So absolutely correct. Ambiguity, lack of data, lack of fact, right? And living in that domain and try to fill the gaps with a little bit of intuition, a little bit of experience and optimism. And therefore, evaluating founders and taking those shots is a key thing that I also learned over a period of time. Still learning, of course.
Got it. So let's come to the most important question in my mind. I think, are there any new skills that you had to acquire or develop when you transitioned into the VC role?
You know, that's a very good question. I will say the one skill that I did not necessarily imagine was super critical as a VC is ability to, I wouldn't say multitask, but do very quick context switching, right?
Okay.
And this can happen multiple times during the day and across multiple days as well, right? Because as a VC, you're not building one product, one technology, one company, right? You are working with multiple founders in multiple areas of technology, right? With various complexities and at also different stages of their evolution and growth. So a typical day for me can have a mix of many things, right? I could spend 2 hours in the morning speaking to two founders, listening to two new pitches, correct? And each of those two pitches could be different, right? One could be building some AI solution. One could be building a robotics or a, you know, hardware problem. So, you know, in the first 1 hour, I'm thinking of AI and the market and listening to that founder. Then I finish that call, I take notes and I come to some conclusion or, you know, follow through with that. The next hour, I'm thinking of a whole different industry or whole different problem, a very different founder. Correct? So context switching. Maybe my next two meetings are with some other VC investors. And there I am probably telling them about my portfolio, right? And I'm presenting maybe one, maybe three, maybe five companies in my portfolio and telling them what are good things about these companies and what are the opportunities. So I'm suddenly also, you know, pitching my portfolio to somebody else, correct? That's a context switch and I'm doing multiple in a short span of time, right? In maybe half an hour, I could talk to them about five of our companies in a very crisp fashion, right? So again, there is context switch. Maybe the second half of my day is about fundraising for the fund itself, right? Which is I'm talking to investors, telling them about my fund strategy and my fund vision and the economics and the details and how we are progressing. So I'm again in pitch mode, but I'm not pitching a startup. I'm pitching our portfolio. I'm pitching the fund, correct? So just imagine all of these things. And we do this all day long, every day, all the time. So this I had not imagined how much important it was to be able to compartmentalize time and mind share and therefore be able to do a good job across all of these, correct? Add to this, we've spent time with founders and they are asking for advice or guidance or help on strategy, on team, on fundraising, correct? There are so many things happening at the same time and one has to be comfortable with switching tracks very quickly, but also be on top of each aspect and being both wide and deep as much as possible at the same time. So hopefully that's a flavor of understanding a little bit of multitasking and context switching at a very fast pace. I think that's a skill I would highlight, which was not intuitive to me before I started doing this.
Got it. That's really interesting. Like, how do you train your mind to have such high context switching, or is it just through experience that you pick up?
No, I think it's hard. I wouldn't say I'm still great at it. You know, trying to become more efficient, trying to be very knowledge-oriented, and trying to also be very rigorous with, you know, being disciplined about how you maintain your knowledge and information, right? Your emails, your documents, your conversation, so that you have access to whatever you need at all points in time, so that you can use the relevant information in the relevant conversation at the right time. Correct? Very difficult,
yeah.
But you're right. I would say experience teaches you to be more efficient and to compartmentalize better. And most importantly, it becomes heavily about time management and maintaining your calendar in a very, very crisp fashion, so that, and referring back to it, so that you're aware and you're spending enough time both preparing as well as executing. Correct? Otherwise, you can keep executing and doing all of these things without preparing. So you also have to carve out time for thinking, slow down and thinking and put it all together. Right? So I wouldn't say I'm an expert. I'm great at it, but getting better, hopefully, you know, with every passing year. But I would say the best investors, best VCs I meet and I know, and for example, my co-founder partner Vishesh, he's been doing this for more than 15 years. He does this amazingly well and compartmentalizes as well as keeps high level of discipline in maintaining knowledge and allocating time to everything. And that's the only way to do it. And over a longer period of time, experience is the best way to learn.
Yeah, makes sense. Planning better with discipline really helps. So what about skills like financial analysis or cap tables, valuations, those kind of aspects? Do we need to pick those up as well?
They are necessary. Definitely, it's part of the business, right? To understand how companies are valued, right? How negotiations are done, how pricing of rounds is done, of equity is done, right? Variety of aspects. It is necessary to know the thing. I would still say that those are more tangible skills, easier to acquire by reading, learning, and by doing.
Right.
Right. As opposed to the, so I would prioritize the softer skills opposed to the harder skills like these. Correct? And by hard, I mean, they are just, they can easily be learned, you can be trained, you can, you know, so on and so forth. Correct? And again, with experience, you can get more edge cases and therefore you are more holistic. But I wouldn't say that that cannot be learned. That's among the easier ones to learn, in my opinion. But they are definitely needed as part of the job.
Got it. So next, I want to get your thought process behind the importance of having mentors in your career. Any mentor or role model who guided you during this transition, or what are your thoughts around that?
No, I think definitely, I think mentors and people that you can look up to and people who probably gone through the journey, right, in different forms and shape, and can be sort of a humbling as well as a, you know, a grounding, you know, force for you while you are trying to do newer things, etc., is very critical. I wouldn't say any one or two particular people, but many people have helped me along the way, correct? They've mostly, you know, been people who've been entrepreneurs, who, of course, are who've been in the domain longer than me. I would definitely say that my co-founder, partner Vishesh, because he spent so much time in venture, continues to be, you know, a guide for me, and, you know, because he spent time in this ecosystem and has grown and evolved. So I keep going back to him for feedback while we jam and, you know, also share ideas and stuff. But on a bunch of things, I can keep going back to him for advice and guidance as well, at least on the venture capital side, given his depth of experience, correct? I've, of course, you know, taken guidance and help from a lot of friends who've been entrepreneurs, correct, who I spent time with over the years, who've been very successful entrepreneurs, who've done well, built large businesses, and their journey and learning from their journey. And I may not have invested in them, but when we sit down and have a conversation about their challenges, how they overcame certain challenges, how they went through the toughest times, how they continued to be motivated and tenacious, all of that kind of feeds into how I can hopefully become a better VC. And I also, of course, look at myself as an entrepreneur even today, because we have started our fund ourselves, right? Ground up. I'm an entrepreneur just in the VC world. Right?
Yes.
So therefore, learning from entrepreneurs is equally important. And that also has continued to, you know, help me. So I would say many, many mentors over the course of my career, right? You know, my early managers, my teammates, entrepreneurs later, I'm still in touch with them. So I've sort of maybe picked up a little bit from many, many people. That's probably been my approach to mentorship and advice than having one or two core people.
Got it. And I often hear younger people like coming up and asking that they don't struggle to find a right mentor. And I don't think there is something like a right mentor. And even if you don't have someone as a mentor in person, you can always go and have a passive mentorship. And I am sure like many audience and listeners listening into this episode would have already gained passively a lot from you in today's episode. But also,
I think there are many sources of knowledge today available, right? Like you said, active and passive. And that is a benefit everybody should avail. You're right.
Exactly.
Don't get, you know, an individual to give you time. But actually, I think if you are motivated enough and you are curious enough and you really want to help, people are very, very open in providing time. All you need is be willing to listen to you, correct?
Right.
Especially at more than advice, just listen so that you can bounce off and you can put your point of, you know, your thought process. Because particularly entrepreneurship, et cetera, can be a very tough and, you know, lonely journey. So you should have something outside of your core circle and outside of your investors, outside of your co-founders and your core team. Find somebody that you can just go once in a while and share what you're doing, share what you are feeling, share your state of mind, right? Share what you are, you know, struggling with, and just vent it out in some sense, right? Sometimes you'll get some feedback, sometimes you'll not, but even somebody listening to you can be a great way. And then just giving their own experience, maybe, right? They don't have to solve your problem, but they can talk about how they go through life. So it could also be, point I'm making is, it could also be a peer, right? It doesn't only have to be a senior, right? Of course, senior people are great at structuring advice and thoughtful feedback, but even a peer who's doing something else can be a great person to sound off. You just spend 2 hours, let's say in a month, and then you can share your journey, they can share your journey. You can learn through that. That's possible. And of course, you're right, podcasts like these, right, blogs out there, many, many avenues available today to get feedback.
Yeah, and like extending on that thought, I also like this concept of what is called the personal board of directors, I think, which is made famous by Gibson Biddle, who was the VP of product at Netflix. And he makes this same point that it may not be some mentor, may not be someone senior or super senior to you. It can be your peers, your colleagues, and it should be varied. Your personal board of directors should have varying experiences across various levels of experience as well. And it's reach out to them, as you said, once in a while or someone to learn and listen from them and make it a habit. In fact, make it a calendaring habit in a way.
Makes a lot of sense. That's great advice. And I think all of us can do that, right?
Yes.
Our circle and the people around us, and that can make us better in whatever we do.
Got it. Okay. So we have covered a lot of perspectives. So any resources you would recommend or advise for someone looking to transition from product to VC?
No, I think unfortunately no particular resources. I do, you know, I am very active on Twitter and I do follow a lot of VCs globally, right, that have been doing this for many, many years, right? And their thoughts either in tweet form or in their blogs or newsletters are very strong sources of, you know, how their journey has evolved. Right.
Okay.
So I think Eric Newcomer's, you know, Substack newsletter is something I follow, right? That is very interesting. Follow a bunch of, you know, very senior LPs domestically as well as globally. Being the most important thing more than success is longevity, right? So people who've been doing this for longer periods of time and sustain themselves, right? There is a lot of learning from there. So I think my go-to is, of course, on LinkedIn, there's a bunch of advice, but Twitter, you can curate your, you know, who you want to follow, right? So I'm really active there by following people, and a bunch of people really share a lot of information about their journey. There is a VC called Ho Nam, who's very popular, who's also been doing this for a longer period of time, has great things to share about experience as a VC and through their career. So I would say a couple of these, you know, their Twitter as well as their newsletters can be very relevant, but I'm sure you can find many more.
All right. Sure. I'm going to put those links as well as your Twitter bio link in the show notes for the audience to take advantage of. Now, let's come to the last section of our discussion where I want to get a bit forward-looking. What are the future trends that you see in the VC industry that someone looking to transition should keep in mind?
Yeah, I think like everything else, right, we are also sort of seeing a lot of changes in the VC industry itself, right? One thing, if you notice over the last 5+ years, is the emergence of specialized smaller VC funds. Historically, there were many large VC funds doing one size fits all, doing a variety of investments, being sector agnostic. More and more, there is specialization and expertise, and VC funds becoming, you know, maybe having limited size, smaller size, but deep expertise in specific areas, right? We ourselves can be some example in that, right? We tech focused.
Yeah.
Right? So that is a strong trend we are seeing, and I think that will only keep getting better. The reason being, the depth of expertise is very valuable for entrepreneurs in addition to capital, correct? What is happening in venture capital, as dollars, as capital quantum is growing, right? It is becoming commoditized and easy to get. So
yeah,
capital itself is not the problem. The important thing for the entrepreneur is, what does he or she get in addition to the capital, correct? From the VC that they are partnering. And therefore, I think specialization and being better at narrower areas or thematics can be a very strong advantage for anybody entering VC or trying to build a career. Correct? As opposed to probably being a one-size-fits-all. So I would maybe highlight that, right? You also might have observed, you know, the emergence of solo VCs, correct? Or
yeah,
VC funds. So operator VCs, right? So many of these newer themes are emerging, right? There are entrepreneurs who are running VC funds on the side, correct? There are experts in specific functional areas, like there are GTM experts, right? There are sales experts, there are technology experts, and they are building VC funds with that expertise because that's what they're offering the founder, correct? Then instead of having very large VC firms with full service, people are keeping VC firms lean and small, correct? With depth of expertise, etc. That's the other trend. So all of these things are happening. So I would urge people who are new to VC or want to enter VC to think about what their core strength is and double down on that and become the VC of that nature, as opposed to try to be a VC for everybody. Depending on your background and your expertise, also help founders with that expertise and then put capital on top and then build your niche as a VC in that fashion.
Completely agree. And I think as a vertical SaaS, you know, gets more trend, I think similar lines, vertical VC or specialized VC is the way for the future, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
Awesome. And can you share your thoughts on the future of Indian deep tech startup scene? What are some themes you see there playing out?
No, of course. Biased, but I'm very, very positively biased that we are at the very early and nascent stage of a real big evolution, right, in deep tech from India, correct? We are still just scratching the surface of what is possible from India. In the next 10+ years, we will see amazing technical innovations that companies will create and create companies that will get built in the deep tech sector. Again, it is important to remember that deep tech is a broad umbrella. So there are many, many sub-themes and sub-thematics within it. But a few areas that we at Specialia are most excited about and share. Obviously, space tech is of immense importance and excitement for us. The kind of companies that are getting formed and the number of quality companies that are getting built in space tech makes it very exciting for the next 10+ years of space tech from India. Rocket launch companies, satellite companies for communication, Earth observation. One of our most recent investments is a company called Inspexity, right, which is out of IIT Bombay. A professor has started, and they are building, you know, robotic systems for space manufacturing and to finally do space manufacturing and to finally have the holy grail of building cities in space. They will start with very basic things like service and repair of satellites in space and debris-related activities, but they will progress it to very, very futuristic things over the medium to long term. So very, very exciting problems they solve. So space tech is obviously very strong. Broader theme of climate tech continues to be exciting, right? Newer and newer solutions for, you know, carbon capture, hydrogen, you know, how do you do heating and cooling more efficiently across the globe, right? How do you have newer types of batteries and cells for efficiency? How do you do material innovation for recycling or for using more efficient materials that are harder to find than rare earth materials in the earth surface, correct? There are so many challenges in climate tech and sustainability, right? And the energy domain that have to be solved. Be very bullish about Indian companies solving across many of these factors. The third area that I will talk about where we are just starting to spend time is biotechnology, correct? Which is typically at the intersection of synthetic biology, fermentation, and lab-based alternative materials and proteins, right? So anything that can be produced in the lab, that is, that can be replicated in the lab, that historically has been from natural sources, like either animal sources or plant-based sources or earths, right? If we can replace that by creating that, replicating that in the lab, it is better for the environment because you are, you know, being less carbon intensive in that process, right? So alternative proteins for various ingredients, alternative foods, lots of areas, of course, different ways on the biotech side, using AI for drug discovery and through the process of drug discovery, other aspects of biotech. So biotech, which is sciences and bio, with the intersection of software and particularly data and AI today, enables a lot of problems to be solved. That is the third theme that I will highlight to be, we are super excited about.
Indian deep tech really holds the promise, as you mentioned, in the next 10 years. And I think we as a community with people like you and many more listening to this episode definitely bode well for the future. Arjun, thanks a lot for sparing your time today. Appreciate you sharing these insights, decoding the VC world. I'm sure you have motivated quite a few of the folks listening to the episode to be more interested about not just getting funding from VCs, but also learn how they function and maybe make that jump in the future.
Lovely. Thank you so much for having me. Pleasure being on the show, and thanks for the lovely conversation. Really enjoyed it.